Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to take us on a little mid-course detour from research and from U.S.-based work to talk about a program intervention that I work on in the Global South. My name is Emily Tightsworth, and I am based here in the Bay Area at the Public Health Institute in Oakland, and I manage a program called the Adolescent Girls Advocacy and Leadership Initiative, or AGALI for short. So I'm going to talk specifically about our work around reproductive health, and then that in the context of our advocacy work for girls' health and rights more generally, and then talk about some of the outcomes and results in terms of policy change for girls that our partners in country have been able to achieve. So I wanted to start out with a little bit of background for those of you who don't work on girls' issues specifically. It's definitely a distinct subset when you're talking about reproductive health from women in general, and there's a lot of new interest in research that's coming about focusing on girls, particularly between the ages of 10 and 19 as a specific subgroup worthy of studying and working on, particularly because they are such a marginalized group. So over 50% are out of school, there are a lot of risks in terms of poverty, and maternal mortality is the top killer for girls ages 15 to 19. So there are a lot of sexual and reproductive health issues that adolescent girls face. At the same time, girls are really a powerful opportunity to generate change at the family and community level. Speaking of sexual and reproductive health, as you can see, if there's increased contraceptive use among those girls and young women who would like to access contraceptives and don't have that access, could reduce adolescent maternal mortality by 35%. So there's a huge sort of multiplier effect and a lot of sort of untapped potential that adolescent girls represent in terms of improved sexual and reproductive health outcomes. So a little bit of background about our program. We, as I said, are based here in the Bay Area at PHI, and we mainly partner with the UN Foundation and a couple other smaller foundations and then UN country programs in these five countries, Liberia, Malawi, Ethiopia, Guatemala, and Honduras, where we implement our programs. So I'm going to talk a little bit about who we work with and then go through what strategies we use when we're working with in-country partners, and then a little bit about our research and our outcomes. So our goal is really to improve adolescent girls' lives holistically, not just in terms of sexual and reproductive health, but when we get to talking about the work that we've supported in country, you'll see a lot of that work really does focus exclusively on sexual and reproductive health because it's such a critical age, and this is a really high need that a lot of our partners have identified as something that they feel that there's a lot of change that needs to happen on the policy level for girls in their countries. So we work mainly with civil society leaders. We actually work directly with adults, so not so much with the girls themselves, but a variety of leaders above the age of 18 who do direct service work with girls. So that could be someone who runs a shelter for girls who've been victims of gender-based violence, who runs a sexual and reproductive health clinic, and who feel that they want to incorporate advocacy to improve things on a systems change level into the work that they're doing. So we use six general strategies, and I'm going to talk briefly about each of those before I get into our results. When a leader becomes an AGALI fellow and joins our program, they participate in a week-long capacity-building training program where they learn about the legal and policy framework affecting girls in their country. They look more deeply at the grassroots issues that are affecting girls, whether they be harmful traditional practices, issues of early marriage, lack of access to sexual and reproductive health services, that whole variety. And then at the end of the week, for the last 2 days, they have a chance to go through a facilitated process with our trainers to, considering the work that they're doing in their own organization, develop an advocacy project proposal that focuses on improving the sexual and reproductive health or livelihoods or rights of girls. So what they develop really depends on the work that they're already doing, and I would say about 60% of the proposals that they develop at least have to do with sexual and reproductive health in some form. So what we really focus on is helping the Agali Fellows take their what they learned during the workshop and put that into practice. So through a guided process with us and some of the people that we work with in country, they are able to develop polished proposals to actually do advocacy for sexual and reproductive health for girls. And we are able to provide seed funding to implement the strongest of those proposals. So to date, we've funded about 40 small projects, and they've had some great impacts in terms of sexual and reproductive health policy outcomes at both the local and national level in all of our countries. Just briefly to touch on this, we also provide on-demand technical assistance for our fellows, so they're eligible to receive any of this once they become part of our program for as long as they're interested in staying involved. We also bring our fellows back together at least once a year and for smaller 2 to 3 day trainings where they look at a specific issue within advocacy for girls. We just ran a workshop in Honduras a couple months ago about focusing on sexual education and how to make sure that that's girl-friendly at the level of schools, at the local level. So while it is more broad, there's a lot of focus on sexual and reproductive health topics within advocacy for girls. We also support the leaders who we work with to do trainings for girls groups and other community groups. And as you'll see in a second, they've been able to reach over 40,000 girls with these trainings. So they range from training on sexual and reproductive health and rights to advocacy to rights generally. So this is a way that they can kind of expand the knowledge base in their communities in terms of what advocacy is and how it can benefit girls. And lastly, one of the things that we've really noticed, especially in the sexual and reproductive health sphere, is that there's not a lot of access at the grassroots level to actual policies and laws. And so we have, through a combination of video and media advocacy, case studies, and policy briefs, attempted to kind of fill that gap in a lot of the countries where we work. There is not a lot of access to or understanding the actual content of a lot of policies, and so these policy briefs that we've developed in local languages are used by our fellows and other advocates to lobby or educate decision makers and to help girls themselves understand what their rights are in the legal framework of their country. And if any of you happen to work in the countries that we focus in, we have policy briefs downloadable for free on our website, which is just agaliprogram.org. So. I'm going to skip this. This is our program model, and it's a little bit hard to take in, but if you are interested in knowing a little bit of the nuts and bolts, that's also on our website. So we right now have 89 fellows who've gone through our program. They've built this global civil society network where they, independent of what we are doing in our program, are able to share best practices and lessons learned in the advocacy that they do. As I mentioned, they've been able to reach over 40,000 girls. And I'm going to talk now about the major legal and policy wins that they've been able to achieve with the seed grants from Agali. So in Guatemala and in the Central American countries where we work in general, violence against girls and lack of access to sexual and reproductive health services are huge issues. And to that end, our grantees have been successful in advocating for the passage of two national policies to promote teen pregnancy prevention and improved pregnancy services for teen girls. They've gotten the ratification and the funding for a national sexual violence protocol to care for girl survivors of violence. And in Honduras, there's a ministerial declaration that some of you may be familiar with at the global level called Prevention Through Education. So there's a network there that we support that is currently advocating for full implementation of this ministerial declaration, which focuses on sex education in schools through ninth grade. In Liberia, just last year, we were very excited that with a couple of small seed grants, two of our grantees were able to, in the period of less than a year, advocate successfully for the passage of the national children's law there, which focuses partially on sexual and reproductive health, but really is more of a broad statement on children's rights and gives legal and policy backing to a lot of what the grantees and partners that we work in country are doing, since there was no law at that point addressing girls or children's rights at all. This is a huge win for them, and it's something that a lot of the sexual and reproductive health advocates that we work with in Liberia are now using as backing for a lot of their further advocacy work. And in terms of Malawi and the sexual and reproductive health work that we're supporting there, a lot of focus on harmful traditional practices, including FGM and child marriage. And as we speak, I think, the parliament in Malawi is debating raising the age of marriage from 15 to 18, which we hope will be successful in passing before the end of the year. So that's something that can have really concrete and specific impacts in terms of girls' sexual and reproductive health, in terms of delayed sexual debut, delayed childbearing, and all of those things that contribute to improved sexual and reproductive health. So we're really excited about that. And lastly, I just want to highlight two of the countries where we work, partially as a consequence of their involvement in Agali, and then partially just in the recognition of the gaps that already exist at the national level in Malawi and Honduras. Our fellows have created these national advocacy networks. They're advocating for sexual and reproductive health rights for adolescent girls and young people. And they're really doing wonderful work, and they are accepting new organizations to join. So again, if any of you work in these countries and are interested in getting involved in any way, those are both active networks that are working on a lot of really key sexual and reproductive health issues in both countries at this point. I think that is it. I think I just want to close at this point and say that what we've really found through the 4 years that we've been implementing this program is that there are a lot of gaps in terms of laws and policies that can benefit adolescent girls at the national level in all of the countries where we work. We've also found that with very limited investment and limited capacity building, direct service organizations that are doing this direct work in healthcare or education or information for adolescent girls can have these systems change national impacts in terms of policy. And so if any of you are interested in learning more, you can definitely visit our website. It is agaliprogram.org. Thank you.
I'm not sure how much of the marriage is like a cultural marriage as opposed to like a legal thing.
So the work that our partners are doing, it's both. So there's a legal component, and then even if the age of marriage is changed, there's a customary law where girls are now getting married as early as 9 or 10. So the work that we're supporting, and I didn't feel that I had time to kind of go into it more in depth, but part of it is working directly with the traditional authorities and the chiefs at the local level to make sure that they understand more clearly kind of what the risks are for girls in their community, and that they pass bylaws at the local level that prohibit the practice. So we're kind of at this point in Malawi trying to work from both directions, so that the law is passed, but then also at the local level that is reflected in the customary law.